From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE, ABQ Connect.
Oh, it's like a parent being asked, who's your favorite kid? You know, one of my favorite days on ABQ Connect Fridays, we always get great insight from Brian Cochran and John Moore Associates. And of course, at the end of the hour, we'll get our update from Heritage Foundation. Just great information consistently. And Brian's in studio. Brian, thanks for coming in again.
Yeah, my pleasure. Blew on in from north part of town.
Yeah, someone asked me, I think last night, what's forecast? I go, wind.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you wanted to just destroy a kite, the last couple of days would be the day to get out and do it. I was asking someone yesterday, Brian, have you ever had the kites that had actually more the two strings with more control?
Yep. Yeah.
It's a little to get used to it, but once you do, it's more like you're flying.
Yeah. I grew up in the Northwest, and one thing they do on the Oregon coast is they had big kite festivals there because it was always windy. And the joke there was you had to wear shoes, you know, cement shoes to keep from blowing off the beach.
I will have to send you. There's one that happens in the East Mountains every year, which is a windy place.
Yep.
I'll have to send you the details on that. Well, Brian's in studio with us, and off the air we were talking, and I let Brian know our topic today until he brought it to my attention. As much as I, you know, try to keep up on the news, this wasn't something that I was really aware of, and it's going to be some great information, Brian, but we're going to talk a little bit today about Secure 2.0 Act and some of the thoughts and things being proposed. But for those unfamiliar, why don't you make them more familiar?
Yeah, so as you said, this is a conversation on Secure 2.0. So what does that mean? Well, there was a Secure 1.0.
Was there a beta?
And these are legislation put forth and passed by Congress. The first Secure Act was actually passed a couple years ago. It was back at the very end of 2019 and went into effect in 2020. And Secure, when they talk about the Secure Act, it's all about retirement. And, you know, Congress gets pretty creative with their little acronyms. And the Secure Act stands for Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement. That's Secure, which is my second favorite acronym. My favorite is the Prevent Every Legislator from Owning Stock Investments, which is the Pelosi Act. And I don't care which side of the aisle you're on, that's a pretty funny bill. But so Secure Act is all about legislation that changes the rules around retirement plans. And Congress over, you know, the last 100 years has set forth different plan options for saving for retirement. And the first Secure Act, again, was passed in 2019, went into effect in 2020. It was pretty small. There was not a lot of major changes. There were two big things that hit in the Secure 1.0. The first was that the age for required minimum distributions, the age at which you have to take money out of an IRA or other retirement account, was moved back from 70.5 to 72. That was the first big change. The second
one was in 2019.
That was back in 2019, yeah. Went into effect in 2020. And the second rule that changed then was the rule on how you inherit an IRA if you're a non-spouse beneficiary. So if I pass away and my wife gets the IRA, that's one thing, but it's very different when it goes to a non-spouse, such as a child or a sibling or something like that. Right. So they changed those rules a little bit. So not too bad. This new act, Secure 2.0, was passed at the very end of December, December 29th, 2022. Some of the provisions go into effect this year, others spread out. We'll talk about that more later. But there were over 90 changes in this. So obviously, we're not going to cover all 90 changes in depth here today, but that's a lot of shifts in the world of retirement savings.
That's a lot farther along than the beta. That's for sure. And let me say this too, as a layperson who really didn't know this prior to you and I putting it on our schedule. Brian, when you say government, my radar goes up, you know, as I was reading through the 2.0 information that I found available, some of which is on Insights tab at johnmoore.com, I read some and thought, well, that sounds good. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, but I'm going to be interested to hear what Brian has to, what am I missing? And to be honest, Brian, just because government, caution.
Yeah, and I think the theme you have to keep in mind here when we talk about retirement plans is whether it's an IRA, Roth IRA, 401k, 403b, those are some of the common structures for retirement saving. Those are all designed to incentivize and reward proper use of funds for retirement savings. So this is a positive.
Good. You
know, a lot of what we see in tax code is about how do we get more money away from Americans. A lot of these tax codes around retirement savings are designed to incentivize people to be responsible and save for their own financial independence. And there's a few themes we see when we look at Secure 2.0. The first theme is that almost everybody's impacted. And when we talk today, we're going to talk about savers, people who are saving for retirement, people who are already retired would be the second category. And then the third is business owners. How does it impact someone who might want to offer a retirement plan for their employees?
Small and big business.
Small and big, yep. The second theme is that there is increased flexibility. A lot of these rules are going to give us more options, but with that comes more complexity. You know, the more opportunities and trade-offs we have, the more complex the world we're living in. And the third theme is that there's a good chance that some of these are going to impact you, whether you are a business owner, retiree, or a saver. So, you know, there's going to be something we talk about today that should be relevant to you.
And I'm sure we'll get to this today, but you know, when you mentioned complexity, one of the things that comes to mind for me, not only the things that you and I talk about, but you know, Medicare, Medicaid, the people that specialize in that, and that, and the rules and things mm-hmm. for that keep changing and you know, the book gets thicker and thicker. And as things become more complex, you know, it may be time, maybe not, but it may be time if you don't have someone to help walk you through those kind of things to really consider having that so you can, you know, really be the best steward of what's been provided to you.
Yep. And I always like the phrase that you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And they're putting in more and more of these rules in place. There's more that you may not know. And that's why I trust professional advisors. I have a wonderful tax advisor, an attorney I work mm-hmm. with. You know, I have someone else that helps advise me on my trees, on my property.
Right.
All those things. I don't know what I don't know when I step outside my area of expertise. So this is only going to expand those areas where there may be opportunities available that you are not familiar with, if not for a professional advisor in your life. And if you want to dive in, Steve, we can talk yeah. about the first category, probably where most of our listeners would probably fall would be the savers.
You know, I'm trying, Brian.
Someone's saving.
I'm trying.
And I think the key theme here goes back to that idea of flexibility. So a lot of the new rules from the Secure Act 2.0 have to do with creating more flexibility on how you put money into your retirement plan, but also more ways to get it out. I think one reason some people don't use things like 401ks and IRAs is that they don't want to feel like their money's too far away, or they don't want to be penalized for accessing dollars that they're saving. So the first thing I think was really an interesting move by Congress. And the first thing that I'll talk about is this idea of a student loan match. So what the heck is that? So a lot of people understand that you might be working for an employer and they might incentivize you to save in your retirement plan by giving you a matching contribution. I understand Calvary offer something like this, yeah. right, Steve? Yeah. So most employers who have a reasonable size staff will offer an employer match where if I put in, let's say, 3% of my income into my retirement plan, I get a match. Now, what we see, though, is with some young people, they're saying, well, that sounds great, but I'm also trying to do some other things with my money. I need to pay off my student loans, for instance. Mm-hmm. So this new provision that goes into effect in 2024, next year, will allow the employee to pay down their student loans and show proof of that to their employer, and the employer can match what the person's paying off in their student loans as a contribution to their retirement plan. So the employee doesn't have to decide between building money for retirement or paying down loans. Doing both.
Are you finding employers doing that in addition to a match that they may already be doing?
This goes into effect next year.
Yeah.
And so we don't really know exactly yeah. how some of these things are going to pan out. But I think the principle and the attempt here by Congress to incentivize retirement savings is good. So you can imagine, yeah, those especially younger people right out of college or someone starting a new career where they had to go get reeducated, what a great opportunity to say, I'm going to pay off my student loans and be rewarded by my employer right. for doing so. It's a pretty cool provision.
Well, and this may be under the portion where we get to talking about how it affects employers, but is there an incentive for the employers to do that?
There is, and we'll talk about that when we get to the employer section. There's actually new tax credits for matching.
Okay.
And there's a similar provision that has to do with emergency savings. So when we see young people in our office, usually the two things they're struggling with is paying off debts and building an emergency reserve. So this second provision is pretty neat as well, and I think another smart move by Congress. It's something called an emergency savings account. So let's say you don't have student loans to pay off, but you need to build up some, so my car breaks down. Well, what they're offering is now something called an emergency savings account where the employee puts money in this savings account and the employer will then match into the retirement plan of the employee. So again, it's saying, hey, you know, I know we want to incentivize money into your retirement plan, but you know, if you don't have an emergency fund yet, maybe you need to start there. And I'm going to reward that as an employer by putting money in your retirement plan.
Well, the same way they would saving. If that money was going to the retirement. Mm-hmm. So with the that little side balloon that's being filled with emergency funds, essentially, it sounds like the employer would just match funds like they would if they, mm-hmm. they were going.
Exactly. So one way to think of this is starting in 2024, when these emergency savings accounts and student loan matches come available, when you're entering an agreement in a new retirement plan as a employee, you'll really think of it three options. Option one, do I want to pay off my student loans with my money and get a match? Option two, do I want to build an emergency savings account and get a match? Or option three, do I want to actually just save for retirement and get a match? And I love that because it gives people the flexibility to do what's in their best interest,
right,
of managing debt or building emergency reserves. And if you've already checked the boxes, you've paid off your student loan and you've built up an emergency reserve, well, then you can still get a match for saving for retirement. But one way or the other, your employer is going to incentivize good behaviors with your money. Yeah, really powerful.
Okay, and now is that all for people saving, or is there more to think about?
A lot more to think about. The next thing that's relevant is there's going to be new incentives. This starts in 2025, but some employers do this today, and it's called automatic enrollment, where if I'm going to go start working for Steve Ryman and Associates as a new employee, I will automatically be enrolled to a 3% contribution to my retirement plan. Now, you can consent out of it. Right. You can do a negative consent, basically, where you say, nope, I don't want to be part of this. But if you don't say anything, you're going to be put in this plan. And I love this. As someone who sits down every day looking at how much people are saving, so many people tell me, I wish I would have started sooner. That's the most common thing I hear.
Brian, isn't it true most people could have, mm-hmm. You know, if it is being put into a savings account, a 403B or 401K or IR, whatever, that we seem to find a way to manage to get to the next paycheck with what we have.
Right. And if you think about it, 3% of your income is in most cases not a make or break number.
Well, and since most of that is going to go into a pre-tax account, at 3%, won't most people not even notice the difference in the net that they're bringing home?
A lot of times we see that. Yeah. And what I love about this, though, is that from your first paycheck, you see that deduction.
Right.
So a lot of people don't want to start saving for retirement because their paycheck will go down. Well, if your first paycheck is already this reduced amount and also getting your FICA and your, you know, all the other things that come out of your paycheck, well, then it's just sort of automatic. And then the second component of that is not only does it default to make you contribute to your plan, it also automatically increases your contributions 1% per year.
Right.
So that not only are you saving, but every year you're saving just a little bit more, so that you're building momentum in your retirement savings. And what I've generally found is once someone starts that, they won't stop it, but you have to make that decision to start. Well, maybe not so much going forward. You're going to be automatically enrolled and starting those good behaviors unless you opt out.
I think especially once you see you can manage mm-hmm. with what you have, and when you go to log on to say, I wonder how big that's getting, and you go and see it, and you think, man,
yep.
And then, you know, it maybe would even incentivize people to do more than the 1% a year. But slowly open that floodgate. It's slow instead of all this pressure.
Yep. And the biblical principle for building wealth is steady plodding. 3% to me is not a sprint, it's steady plodding.
Yeah.
Slowly accumulating wealth in a non-speculative manner is the way to go.
And was it adding 1% each year up to 10%?
I don't recall what the threshold is there. But yeah, there is a threshold where it'll stop. And again, all this is still pretty new and we're still digesting the details. But yeah, that's the idea. And we've seen some employers do this already with a lot of success. Our firm no longer manages corporate retirement plans, but when we did, I was always shocked how many people did not contribute to their retirement plan.
I am too.
Even with the incentives. We'd have some employers where only 10 or 20% of people would participate, even though they are going to get a dollar for dollar match on the first, let's say 3% of what the employee put in. So this is a great way to get people into a good habit right off the get-go.
It really is. I mean, I am surprised to see how many, and Brian, I don't manage my money real well. But you know, there are a few things. That's one of the things that, I'm thankful for. And you're right. Looking back, I'm sure I would have appreciated, especially now, that automatic, savings and seeing the results, you know, after years of saving, that's for sure.
Yep.
All right. So more for savers.
Yeah, and so we talked about putting money in the plan. Now let's talk about some more flexibility getting money out.
All right.
Because, again, part of the reason some people don't save is they're worried about getting money out. So two quick ones that are kind of unique, provisions that allow money to come out is, first off, they made permanent this idea of taking money out without penalty if you're subject to some sort of a natural disaster. So you think of hurricanes, tornadoes, things like that. If you're in a disaster area, you're allowed to take money out and show that on your tax return, but then file for relief. This is actually retroactive to back to 2021. You can do that.
And is there any requirement to put that back?
Nope. It just means you can get the money out. And then the other one is public safety workers. So you think of like a firefighter or
first responders.
Yeah, first responder type people. A lot of times they have the option to have, or they will be filed into a pension. So they often retire early because their jobs are full of physical and psychological stress. So now they can actually access their retirement plans at age 50. For most of us, either 55 or 59 and a half. So age 50 plus, if you've been working for the same employer for many years, you'd be able to go in and get money out. So if you are one of those that maybe starts as a firefighter in your 20s, and you retire 25 years of service at 50, you'd be able to not only take your pension, but also access your retirement savings.
Did first responders have a lower age prior to the original Secure?
Not necessarily, I believe. Okay. I think this is a rather new provision.
It's going to be interesting to see how many of them actually go then and take that or just move it into something. You know, because I know many of the ones I know, they have a second career.
Yep.
Opportunity to just put that somewhere and watch it grow.
Yeah, again, it doesn't mean you have to take it out, but it means that if for some reason you need the money, you have more flexibility. Right. That flexibility word is going to keep showing up. Yeah. And so three other quick examples of life event expectations, things that happen that say, where Congress has said, you know, you're not going to get penalized if you take money from a retirement plan. The first is terminal illness. You can take out as much money as you want from your retirement plan without penalty if you have a terminal illness, which is defined as you will pass away in the next 7 years, 84 months. So that's a lot of flexibility. So we can call that the bucket list provision. You know, go out there and use your money now. So you could be 25, 30 years old, but if you're diagnosed with a terminal illness, you can go in and get your money out without penalty.
It's going to be interesting to see how the regulators respond to applications for that.
Yep. And again, that starts this year. In 2024, you can start to take money out for kind of two unique things. The first is domestic abuse, which I thought was interesting. Up to $10,000 taken if you're a victim of domestic abuse. This gives someone more flexibility if they have to reset their life as they leave a situation of domestic violence, which I think, boy, what a great excuse to give someone a pass on their retirement
savings.
You know,
Brian, I'm still cautious, but I'm sitting here going, sounds like the government's getting feelings.
Well, I think they're acknowledging that if people are going to save in these plans, we want to restrict it and incentivize that they hold these dollars until retirement.
Yeah.
But there needs to be reasonable exceptions. And I think everything we're talking about here, you know, is justified as a reasonable exception.
Yeah.
The other one is a life emergency. That's a very broad definition, but they allow $1,000 out for a life emergency. I don't know what all is going to fall into that. The regulations will fill that out. And then in 2026, we'll start to be able to take money out for a qualified long-term care expense as well on a tax-free basis. So now again, not tax-free, excuse me, penalty-free basis. Very big difference there. So a lot more flexibility. So I think the theme here for listeners is going forward, if you have a life crisis, you need to talk to your retirement plan consultant, your financial planner. Is this something that qualifies for me to get money out without penalty because I'm in a tough spot and I need it?
Right. Okay. And if you just tuned in, we're visiting with Brian Cochran from John Moore Associates. We're kind of covering some of the things that we should know about the Secure 2.0 Act. And Brian mentioned near the top of the show, you know, who does that impact? And we're going to talk about people who are saving, which we just covered. Also retirees and employers, both big and small. If that applies to you and you need that information, make sure to stay with us. And we'll be back with more on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE, ABQ Connect.
All right, we're going to jump right back into our conversation with Brian Cochran from John Moore Associates. JohnMoore.com. On the Insights tab, actually, you will see an article covering much of what we're talking about today, navigating the complexities of the Secure 2.0 Act. And Brian, in our first segment, we talked about how it impacts people who are in the midst of saving.
Mm-hmm.
And now we look at those considering retirement.
Well, I want to make one more thing,
okay.
One more point for those who are savers. And also mention you mentioned the Insights page of our website where we did a webinar on this yesterday, about 40 minutes long. So if you want to learn more, that will be also on the Insights page either later today or first thing Monday.
At no cost. This is great insight, great information to access at johnmoore.com. So if you have a question or you're trying to explain it to someone, send them a link or, you know, walk back through it yourself.
Yep. So this last provision I want to talk about for savers, which when I say last provision, there's a lot more here to unpack, but we're trying to keep this on time here. We could spend the whole rest of the day talking about this stuff with 90 changes in the Secure Act 2.0. The next one's kind of interesting. It has to do with 529 plans. For those who aren't familiar, 529 plans are accounts where you can save for the purpose of education funding.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, wait, I thought this was a retirement act. And the connection here is that 529 plans right now, if you save money for education, and let's say your child or grandchild that you save for doesn't use all the money for college, and you take some of the money out for non-education purposes, it's penalized.
Mm-hmm.
And so that keeps some people from using 529s or using them at a high level. But this new provision allows you to actually transfer up to $35,000 over your lifetime from a 529 to a Roth IRA.
Okay.
So rather than letting that money come out restricted, you move it from a 529 plan to a Roth IRA. For those who aren't familiar, Roth IRA grows tax-free. So that would be a tax-free savings tool then for that young person. So my kids are in middle school right now. I have 529s for them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something for someone like me is very attractive because now it's I say, okay, well, if college just doesn't work out, if they go into a trade school that doesn't need as much funding, if they go into the military, if they get a lot of scholarships, there's a lot of reasons that money might not get used for education.
And it must be
kind
of hard, Brian, to determine how much money are you going to put towards a 529 because mm-hmm. you may not know, especially at a younger age, you know, where those kids are going to head. When you were saying that, I come up with all these illustrations, reminding me of when you're paying cash for gas and you're trying to do the math to figure out how much cash can I give them and then not have to go back in to get change trying to fill my tank.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy, actually, as if the change was penalized.
That's right.
Yeah. So this way, your change goes over to a Roth. So
you get pretty close. I think they're figuring, it sounds like, most people can probably figure within about $35,000 whether or not, you know, they're going to have enough.
Yep. So pretty cool provision. And for some of our clients, we're a little hesitant to dive right into the 529s because of the restrictive nature. This might make it a little easier to justify putting money in an education account.
Mm-hmm. And you're a parent who's doing it. I want to remind those grandparents that are able to.
Mm-hmm.
What a great gift to your grandchildren. Yep. And your kids.
We have a lot of grandparents that help out with 529 funding, and they do it either in addition to or in lieu of Christmas gifts,
yeah,
birthday gifts. So maybe you get something small.
Yeah.
As a parent of two middle school kids, I tell you, if we get another Lego in our house, I don't know, I might lose my mind.
No, so. Every year just give them a pat on the back and say, hey, Merry Christmas, enjoy Yale.
Yeah, I think once your kids are taller than you, you shouldn't have to give them birthday presents anymore. Mine are getting there pretty quick. So, let's talk retirees a little bit.
Okay.
So again, there's a lot more there for savers. And in our webinar, we covered more. So if this is interesting to you or you want to go further, check out the webinar on our insights page on johnmoore.com. But talking about retirees, a couple things. The first thing that changes, a couple provisions around required minimum distributions, or RMDs, mm-hmm. which again are is the requirement that you have to take money out of your retirement accounts that are tax deferred when you hit a certain age. So the first thing that happened is, what if you missed that requirement? In the past, there was a 50% penalty if you missed your required minimum distribution. So if you had money in an IRA...
On the whole nest egg?
No, just on the portion you were supposed to take out.
Okay,
so if you had money in an IRA, let's say in 2022, that was supposed to come out because you were of required minimum distribution age, which was 72 at the time, anything 72 or older, then you would have, if you missed that distribution, you would have been penalized for 50% of the value of the distribution. That's a big penalty.
Why does the government want that back in circulation?
Well, most of those dollars are pre-tax.
They're
dollars you saved without paying tax, and they grew without paying tax.
You answer my question.
So they want you to use it for retirement. And again, all those incentives for the taxes were designed so that you could save more for retirement.
Right.
Well, let's get it out now.
Right.
So that penalty went from 50% to 25%. And it even could be as low as 10% if you make a correction, if you take the required distribution within what's called the correction window. I'm not going to get into the details of that. It's pretty complex. The idea is it still stings if you miss the required distribution, but doesn't hurt quite as bad as it did previously. And that's effective this year. I think that's understood. You know, you're talking about seniors here who have their life savings, and you're going to take 50 cents on the dollar just because they didn't follow the rules that they may not have understood.
Right.
So this makes a ton of sense to me.
And you know, as much as I agree with that, another, though, good reason to find someone to help walk you through some of this.
Yeah, we track all of our clients' required distributions, and if at the end of the year they haven't taken them, we call them. My first year at our firm, I had the job of, I actually went to someone's house and was banging on their door at the end of December with a form saying, hey, you need to sign this so you can get your money out so you don't get penalized. You know, because we're pretty passionate about not giving money to the IRS and the government when we don't have to. The second thing that changed is when you have to take money from your retirement account. What is the age of required minimum distribution? And we talked about before in Secure Act 1.0 that was passed back in 2019, went into effect in 2020, the required distribution age went from 70 and a half to 72. That was pretty nice, gave us a little more cushion. It's now 73 or 75, depending on your age. So if you were born between 1951 and 1959, your required distribution age is now 73. So you get a little more time to let that money grow and defer. It gives you a little more flexibility.
Yeah, I want to encourage people to go to insights on johnmoore.com to see this article. Brian posted a chart. I was reading another article earlier today just trying to figure,
the chart helps.
Yeah, the chart makes it really easy to look at. I fall under the latter. If you were born in 1960 or after, that age is pushed back to 75 years old.
Yep. So yeah, if you're born after 1960, 75, and Stephen, you and I were talking about this off air, but you know, why move those ages back?
Yeah.
I think it's just the reality that some people are working longer.
Yeah.
And so giving them more flexibility as to when they have to start drawing this money, again, acknowledging that it comes out as a taxable distribution in many cases.
Any insight as to why people are working longer? Is it because of the need for money, or is it because the medical advances have made it where we're able to?
Yeah, we're living longer.
Yeah,
basically. And if you're in good health, some people work by necessity. Some people do it because they enjoy what they're doing.
Oh yeah,
you know. So
I can't.
Why make them take the money out?
Yeah, I just can't imagine waking up and going, "Wonder what I'm going to do today."
Yeah,
every day.
I don't know. Sometimes I can imagine. It's the end of the week, Steve. I got a lot of things I could be doing right now.
Give me a couple days a week. I'm good.
No, I agree with you. I think we all need purpose. And that's a good segue into a biblical principle here, that there is no biblical reference to retirement. No. There's a guy who built bigger and bigger barns and filled them up and didn't work out so well for him.
And, you know, I have to say, over the period of time I've been acquainted with the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association and watching Billy Graham, the man didn't stop until he went home. Yep. And what a great, and he had plenty of great, you know, other great areas in his life that you could apply. There's a thought.
Yep. So the next thing that changes for retirees is how you might give money away from your retirement account. So if you have an IRA, you can actually send money after you're age 70 and a half. You can send money directly to a charity rather than take money as income. And that's relevant because what you just talked about, you might have a required minimum distribution.
Right.
That says, hey, Steve, you got to take at least, let's say, 10 or 15 or 20,000 from your retirement account this year. And you might say, well, I don't need that. I'd like to pay it forward to a charity. They incentivize that by allowing you to send money directly from your IRA to a charity. Again, it's called a qualified charitable distribution. Really powerful tax planning tool.
Okay. So when you do that, maybe this is getting in the minutia, but since you're taking it out to a charity, does it get taxed there?
Nope.
Because it's going to a charity?
Yep. It's not taxable to you or the charity.
Okay. And then can you use that amount on your taxes at the end of the year for gifts to charities?
Yeah. You don't itemize the deduction anymore, but you're still getting a reduction of your taxable income because it's dollars that are leaving your retirement account that otherwise you would have to pay tax on.
Okay.
You know, So the first thing that changes, it's still 70 and a half is still the date for qualified charitable distributions, even though the required distributions don't start until 73 or 75.
Okay.
So you can actually start giving money to charity even before you're required to take it. The other thing is there's a limit to how much you can do. It's $100,000 per year that you can do through this qualified charitable distribution. You might go, wow, is anyone actually doing that? And actually, we do have some clients that give right up to that $100,000 limit from their IRAs. They're now giving an inflation adjustment to that, so that limit will grow with inflation over time, which is nice because it's been stuck at 100 for quite a while.
Is his name Elon?
And then the third point here is they're allowing you to do a qualified charitable distribution that goes into something called a charitable trust or a gift annuity, which are tools where you make a distribution to a charitable entity and then you get income back. So I could actually give up to $50,000 in my lifetime to a charitable annuity where that money will eventually go to charity when I die. But in the meantime, I get a little bit of cash back. I'll be honest with you, I'm still struggling with that one in terms of who will I recommend take advantage of that. It's a neat provision and we'll learn more about it. But right now it's just kind of a neat little side option for how you handle your required distributions and your charitable distributions. So a lot there for retirees, you know, so you need to better understand when do I have to take money?
Right.
Where does charity fit in for my required distributions or my IRA distributions? And then, you know, what's the best way for me to manage my retirement account now that I'm no longer working? I need to start looking at it as a source of income. The last thing that's relevant for retirees and really just any survivor, surviving spouses now have more options on how they receive an IRA. And I won't go into the details because this gets really complex really quickly. But you can basically look at different strategies based on the age of the person who passed and your own age. There might be incentives for using different options. So the key principle here for listeners is starting next year, especially if your spouse passes away, you need to talk to a professional financial advisor before you sign anything, change anything, claim any IRAs, because there could be strategies that could drastically impact how you receive that IRA and how much you have to take out every year and different rules. So you need to talk to a professional who understands the different options available so that you make sure that you're doing the right thing for your needs.
Okay. You said that was going to be the final on the retiree. However, like you said, there's 90 changes. There's probably a lot more and Definitely. Probably a good idea, again, like you said, to find a professional help walk you through some of what's happening with Secure 2.0. And actually, Brian, for sake of time, to make sure we get the information to our listeners, let's press on through the break and head right into what employers need to know about the Secure 2.0 Act.
Well, the big picture theme with employers is they're trying to incentivize through this legislation. They want more employers, small businesses especially, to open retirement plans. That's the big theme here. So if you're a listener and you either work for a small business and you want to poke at your business owner that you work for and say, hey, you need to get some retirement plans going, or if you're listening and you are a small business owner who doesn't currently have a plan, you need to pay attention to these provisions and talk to your tax advisor or your financial planner, or talk to a pension planning consultant, because there's some really nice incentives here for you to start a plan. And if you think about it, Steve, that makes a lot of sense, because look at all this we talked about for savers.
Right.
Oh, you can do this with a 401k and that. Well, what if you don't have a 401k? Well, then you're locked out of some of these nice provisions. And in this world where finding and keeping good employees is so difficult, what a great thing to offer a retirement plan to incentivize people to work for you or stay with you. So here's the details there. For 401ks, there's now a more generous credit for opening a new 401k. So the way this works is the IRS or Congress has basically passed a rule that says if you open a new retirement plan, whether it's a 401k, a small business plan like what we call a simple IRA, or a SEP, S-E-P IRA, those are all different retirement plans. On all three of them, you can get a startup tax credit, and it's a per participant tax credit. So whether you have two employees or 10 or 15 matters, and it's up to $5,000 can be given to offset the cost of starting up the plan. So if you need to talk to an attorney or a professional and pay them to help you set up your plan, that cost can be basically reimbursed from the government in the form of a tax credit. What a great incentive to go out and start the plan. So that's one of the excuses we hear is, I don't want to go through the cost of starting a plan. Well, the government's making it easier. And on 401ks, they're actually giving a tax credit for the matching contributions to a retirement plan. So again, if I work for Steve Ryman and Associates and you open up a 401k, the government's going to help you pay to open it. And then if I'm your employee, they're actually going to give you a tax credit to help offset the cost of matching my 401k contributions. And that starts off as 100% of the match is a credit for the first couple of years, then it goes to 75, then 50, then 25%. So they're really helping you kick off this plan by saying, hey, we're going to cover the cost to open it, and we're going to cover the cost of matching your employees' contributions. What a great incentive to actually just take the leap, start a plan, and get it going.
And I know you really can't answer this. I don't know if anyone could. When I hear, you know, it just sounds like the government is seeing that people aren't prepared for retirement. Mm-hmm. They're incentivizing people and businesses to do something to be prepared for retirement. And someone who, you know, back in the 40s or 50s, that, you know, when Social Security was new, you know, might think, well, why do they need, because we're going to have Social Security. But I'm going to guess that all of us, I mean, I don't even know that much about how all of that works and looking at it. And, you know, I've heard for years, good luck getting your Social Security. You know, is the government at this point essentially saying, we're concerned?
Well, I think I'm not so worried about Social Security going away. I just think they'll find other ways to keep it around and change it. They've done that already.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, the retirement age was 65, and for you, it's now 67. For me, I'm assuming it's going to be 70 at some point.
Yeah.
Who knows? But I think what this is an acknowledgement is people are living longer, and Social Security doesn't cover everything. So if we can incentivize good behaviors by employers and savers to set up plans and encourage funding those plans, then we'll have a more financially secure populace. And if you think about it, when Social Security started, the age you filed for benefits was 65. And if I remember correctly, I think the life expectancy at that time was 64.
Okay.
So now you got people who retire at 67 and life expectancy is late 70s, early 80s.
Right.
So it's due for reform. We have to look at this problem differently. So also on the small business owners, there's a couple other options. So it used to, the used to be that simples and SEPs, those small business plans, simple IRAs and SEP IRAs, only were pre-tax plans, meaning that you got a deduction for putting the money in and you paid tax on those dollars when it came out in retirement. There's now a Roth option for simples and SEPs where you elect to pay the taxes now and let it grow tax-free for the future. So that's a great point of flexibility, especially for your younger, lower income earners. It might be in their best interest to pay tax now while their income's low.
Well, yeah. I think I was headed there earlier when I was saying, we don't know what they're going to be doing in the future, in spite of the fact they say it's this way now. And we're not taxing it as it goes in.
It's a good incentive. It's a good
I like that. I had thought that it's a tax as opposed to
a tax you don't. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And again, if you're someone who has a high income trajectory, do I want to pay the tax on these dollars now when I'm at a 12% tax bracket, or wait until later when I could be at 30-35% tax bracket? Well, that's not much of a decision in my mind.
Yeah,
and we really encourage our young savers to consider Roths in many cases. There's also that student loan match we talked about is available on simple IRAs. So another incentive there. And then on SEP IRAs, there's now the Roth, as I mentioned before. And this is a quirky one. Some people might have a domestic employee. This is often a nanny or a housekeeper that you pay directly. You can now set up a retirement plan for that person through a SEP IRA.
That's pretty cool.
You might have someone who's taking great care of your family for years or helping out. That's a great way to give back to that person by helping them save for their financial independence. And so you can do that through a SEP IRA now, which I think is a pretty neat provision. And again, in this world of tight employment markets, it might be a good retention method if you have someone that you really like working with your family that you want to keep around. So you've got tax credits to start a plan, tax credit on matching contributions, more flexible plans for employers to set up for themselves and their employees. Just a lot of good provisions there. So I think those are the high level things. Again, our webinar talks about more. You can research more online. I really encourage people who are in some of these spaces where they're just starting to save, or they have a small business, or you're retired and starting to get close to that required distribution age, you need to be talking to a professional, because this is a whole nother layer of laws and complexity and opportunities. That's the key thing here. It's not that you're looking at getting punished if you don't do these things, but you might be missing opportunities to do better in retirement if you're not staying on top of some of these changes.
Well, perfect timing, Brian, because we are out of time. But navigating the complexities of Secure 2.0 Act, you'll find the blog on the Insights tab at johnmoore.com. And as Brian mentioned, watch for that webinar to be posted shortly, as early as this afternoon, the next couple days. But wonderful information. And Brian, looking forward to catching back up with you next Friday. But thanks for the update.
Yeah, my pleasure.